Retronauts is part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. For more information, please go to greenlitpodcasts.com.
This week on Retronauts, we're totally traumatized by the Turbo Tunnel. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's episode is all about the Battletoads. Before I go on, I want to introduce everybody on this totally awesome podcast, because that's the only pun we'll be using for the next 90 minutes. Who is my constant Retronauts companion in North Carolina?
I guess that's me, Jeremy Parrish, but in the virtual world, I'm known as Eczema.
I guess we have to come up with our toad names. I'm Impetigo. Jeremy's Eczema. Who do we have across the cold ocean that has no toads in it?
I am Stuart Jip, and I guess I am Athlete's Foot, but with the Y instead of an A. That's kind of cool, right? I don't know.
That's slightly extreme, I think. And who is our other guest on the line?
I'm Matt McMuscles, Leprosy, Son of Cold. I don't even know where we go from there. And I'm very, very angry because when Mr. Bob Mackey invited me on, I was like, okay, I'm going to say totally several times. He has already said it, but I'm so excited to be on Retronauts. I could just croak. I'm happy enough with that.
We have a second one. That's why the Battletoads couldn't last. There wasn't enough material for more of a series. And for some reason, Matt, Jeremy's on here because he's, Retronauts, obviously. Stuart's on here because he's the British person we have to have on the show, so we're not too mean to Rare.
He's going to be held accountable for all of this.
I'll take the blame.
For whatever reason, Matt, and I don't know, this should not be an insult, but when I thought of Battletoads, I thought of you, and I'm not quite sure why, but I feel like this is in your wheelhouse.
I'm not quite sure why you chose me either, but I've posted a bit about Battletoads. I've played a few of the games on my channel, so I'm not insulted. I detect a little bit of hostility towards the Toads here, so maybe I can even that out.
That's good.
Because I'm pretty sure it's a great series.
You might be misreading my tone. I've got a frog in my throat.
Okay. These are not battle frogs, sir. They're toads.
Oh.
But I will accept
Get
it.
Out.
Sorry, I feel very amphibian about this. I mean, ambivalent.
Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez. Well, okay, so it's 2021, but 2020 was the year of two things, COVID-19 and Battletoads, because Battletoads had their grand revival in 2020 with a reboot. And that led us all to ask, what's the deal with Battletoads? So a year late, we're bringing you this podcast, and I will ask that same question throughout, because this is an interesting series, and it was an interesting kind of flop, kind of hit in certain ways. But I do want to explore where this series went. But of course, my current Zoom/Google Meet background is the Turbo Tunnel, and that is the one reference people of a certain generation will all understand is the Turbo Tunnel. I don't think Zoomers get it. I don't think anyone older than Gen X gets it. But if you're Gen X or Millennial, it used to be like a uniting factor in our lives. If you're getting together talking about video games for the first time in like the early 2000s, we all were traumatized by this one level in Battletoads. That is the lasting legacy. But there are several Battletoads games. There's a reboot. There's a cartoon. There's lots to talk about. Before I go on, I do want to know everyone's Battletoads history. And I know, Jeremy, I choose to believe this is true. You claim to have finished Battletoads as a misguided youth.
Once. I did it once. Yes. And then I said, now I can beat this anytime I want. And I played it again and realized, no, that was a fluke. That is a thing that will never happen again.
Were you a Battletoads renter? Did you purchase Battletoads?
No, I bought it. I bought all the hype. It showed up on Nintendo Power on the cover. There was, there was like a Power Blade episode issue, I think. And then there was like a little like two toad hands holding binoculars. Like in the corner, what was this mysterious frog hand about? And Nintendo Power really hyped this game up. And, at this point, the Super NES was out, but I did not have it. And this was one of those games you could buy and say, well, I don't need a Super NES because look at how good the graphics are in this. So I really, I wanted this to be the game. and I talked it up for a long time, convinced myself I loved it, you know, and then a couple of years later, I played the Super NES game and realized, you know, there's actually nothing redeeming about this, and I don't ever want to revisit this again. And I've been true to my word.
Wow.
Until this very episode.
Yeah, I mean, Battletoads did get a Nintendo Power cover. It was some pretty early hideous CGI art, but it got a, I think it was the June issue. This was the July 1991 video game. But yeah, well, they made a big deal about, a big splash, if you will, about Battletoads. So, Stuart, what was your experience with Battletoads being in the home country of Rare?
I think it just kind of turned up. I remember a friend of mine had the Game Boy. There was a Game Boy game that was like a port of the original game, which was the second one for some reason. I don't know why they did it that way. I'm sure we'll get to that. But my main experience was playing Battle Maniacs, the SNES game.
Hmm.
A friend of mine had that. And I don't think we saw the third level, because even the second level in that game is insane. You're basically descending a tree. It's like the tower level from the first game, but towards the end, the speed goes into ridiculous overdrive. All of the walls are spikes. It just gets insanely tight, and it doesn't even end. It just fades out as you're going down, and if you die while it's fading out, it still counts. So, yeah. But I feel like I think my reaction to that was just kind of like, well, it's a video game, so yeah, of course you're not supposed to finish them. They're impossible, because I had a Spectrum.
Yes.
So I never finished anything.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you very much. I do appreciate that. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And I'm only now coming to terms with it. But so as a result, my response to sort of Battletoads is just kind of like, it's not so bad. Turbo Tunnels, I mean, it's okay. You know, at least it previews the obstacles that are coming. It doesn't just kill you and then make you load for 15 minutes again.
It's slightly fair. And Matt, how about you?
A lot of games at that time, I didn't have a subscription to Nintendo Power. I'd get one later on, like more towards 95. But I would see ads in comic books for NES games all the time. Usually like a white page with the game box just there. And I think it was the Battletoads 1 box art where like the toads are kicking, and it's always weird because they have the exact same design on the box art. Like there's no one doesn't have glasses, you know, a rash or whatever. And I remember seeing that ad just going, oh well, that looks so amazing. Yeah, at the time, did you know, like, is this a Ninja Turtles ripoff? Of course it wasn't from the world of everyone's eyes, but you were still kind of, I'll take more Ninja Turtles. Give me the biker mice. I want them. Like, I'll take it all in. So when I finally did rent it, I thought it was amazing at the time, like just because it was a technically advanced NES title, until you got to the Turbo Tunnel, and I could never, ever beat it as a kid. I don't even think I beat it as an adult. And I only learned a few years ago, it's like, this game isn't that hard if you cheat and use all the teleporting like tricks in the game just to get through it. I didn't even know about that until like I think a episode of Game Center CX when he tried to beat that. But I really liked the Toads a bit more come the Super Nintendo. I was a big Double Dragon fan, so when Battletoads, my mind melted. Battletoads Double Dragon, and I kind of played that as like my Toad game of choice, because for all intents and purposes it was, since it was made by Rare and Double Dragons were an afterthought. But the actual NES game I never saw really past the Turbo Tunnel for most of my life.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Let
I
me
think,
tell you, oh, the rest of the game doesn't get any nicer.
Okay.
No.
It continues to hate you from start to finish.
Is there even a warp path that lets you skip that level where you're jumping through water and there's a rubber ducks that just randomly may or may not kill you?
That one, I don't remember if you can warp past that.
That makes the Turbo Tunnel look like Mario Brothers 1-1, as far as I'm concerned.
We will get to exploring every difficult level of this game. As for me, I did fall for the spell because I was very susceptible to marketing. And Nintendo Power, you know, the cover said this is the hot new thing. And like Matt, yeah, I love Ninja Turtles. I'll take more of these guys, please, because there's just simply not enough turtles to go around. So I never like purchased the games, but I would follow them through rentals. And my enthusiasm gradually declined over time. But I did really like the Double Dragon crossover, which we'll talk about. I thought that was like the best game in the series, the most manageable difficulty and the best gameplay. But outside of that, I can see why it went away, and we'll talk about the many factors involved in that very soon. But yeah, I do want to talk about Battletoads history to put you back in time in the year 1991. So at this point in time, Rare is one of Nintendo's most prolific developers. I believe by the end of their NES work, they did 47 games. They developed 47 games, or at least their name is on 47 games. Some things were subcontracted out.
They were the most prolific Western developers for the NES. They were, you know, beaten in terms of sheer numbers by Tosei, who is based in Japan and made who even knows how many Famicom and NES games. But in terms of Western developed games, Rare was like no one made that many besides them.
And because they were so prolific, the quality of their games varied because you could have something as good as RC Pro-Am. You could have something on the other end of the spectrum like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And most of the things they did... Beetlejuice, too, yeah. And most of the things they did were licensed. They did some original stuff, like Wizards and Warriors, but for the most part, they were doing adaptations of, like, game shows and ports of things. And, yeah, so occasionally you get a good game out of them, but they weren't known for quality. They're just known for the amount of games they put out. So that's Rare is.
Rare is kind of one of those studios, kind of like Tosei, where it really the quality of their output really varies according to who is publishing. And you get the impression that companies like Nintendo or Tradewest said, here, have time and money and make this game good. Like, here's a large ROM that you can put your game on so you're not cutting corners and slashing content and you can actually refine it. Whereas when they were publishing for like an LJN or someone, it was just, you know, please make this game by Monday. And here's like a 2 kilobyte ROM for you to put it on. We want the cheapest possible board for your Nintendo game. So, yeah. So I feel like Rare had great potential, but a lot of their work for the Famicom and NES really just boiled down to contract work, taking a low bid and giving publishers exactly no more than they asked for, like the minimum threshold of acceptability, which for some publishers was extraordinarily low. So if they were like full of people with great technical expertise, that was how they got onto the NES in the first place. They beat everyone in the West to the punch by basically just like reverse engineering the NES, the Famicom. And when they were given the time and space to really create great stuff, they did. And when, you know, they just had to pay the bills and the publisher was like, just get something done for us, they did that too.
Yeah, you could see how the quality of their games skyrocketed when they just became part of Nintendo and had to kind of just hold the N64 aloft with a little bit of help. The quality of their games really did improve. And also, so 1991, Rare is making a lot of games for Nintendo. Also, what's happening in pop culture? Well, here's what's happening in pop culture. 1989 was the year of Ninja Turtles. We did a podcast about that a few years ago, but 1989 was the arcade game, the NES game, and finally, the series had existed, the cartoon series had existed, but 1989 was the start of the weekday syndication package in which there were 65 total episodes, 5 days a week. So that is when the Ninja Turtles hit it huge. Max Turtle Saturation in the 1990, that was the movie. So that is where that fad was at this point in time. And 1990 was also the year of The Simpsons. So in 1990, Turtles are sharing the throne with The Simpsons in terms of what kids like. And by 1991, there's the second Turtles movie. And that's when I feel like, as a kid at the time, that's when the enthusiasm started to wane with the Turtles, where people were less interested. The Simpsons were still the big fad. There was still enough interest to keep that original series on the air until like 1994. But that's when the decline started. And this is when the Battletoads are just coming into being and the decline of the Turtles. And like a lot of the also-ran Turtle clones, Battletoads does happen a bit late. So there are ones that happened much later in time, like Biker Mice from Mars in 1993, Street Sharks is 1994. There's something called Wild West Cowboys of Moo Mesa, 1992. I feel like because of how long things take to animate, all of the Ninja Turtles copycats came a little bit too late to be their own thing. And Matt, I know you have a lot of experience with some of these clones, like especially Street Sharks.
Yes, I have a lot of experience with Street Sharks.
You are a Street Sharks
breeding them.
Yeah, you are a Street Sharks expert on What a Cartoon.
Yeah, no, I was. I mean, around that time though, like 91, I kind of remember there being a lot of hype around the second Ninja Turtles movie, and obviously when kids saw it, it was like maybe a little more kid friendly and everything. But I just remember, because I did a little bit of research, like 93 was when they realized Mirage, Playmates, whoever, that things are really dipping down for us. So we need to, what can we do to re-energize the Turtles? I know, market them even more and put out more action figure lines and get all these, like, not more, you needed to sort of change the Turtles a little bit, but they didn't. It stayed the same until those wacky later seasons where they kept mutating and like whatever, 95, 96. I'm always shocked to know how long the original Ninja Turtles cartoon actually lasted.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm not familiar with these subsequent mutations. That sounds unusual.
Yeah, it was 1996. And I remember seeing the third Ninja Turtles movie in 1993 as a kid, thinking, I guess we're still doing this. I was kind of out of loyalty, kind of out of like nostalgia for being eight that I saw it. But yeah, so how this all ties into Battletoads, I mean, obviously Battletoads is trying to be their own Ninja Turtles, but I was looking at the documentary about Battletoads on the Rare Replay game package, and essentially Rare, they saw the amount of merchandise that the first, I guess technically the second Batman movie was making, Batman 1989, and they were like, hey, merchandising rules, we want some of that. And that is where the idea for Battletoads started, is that they wanted to have an IP that could spawn a bunch of toys and products and comic books and fruit pies and, you know, Chef Boyardee creations and what have you. Seeing how they went about it, I feel like because they were in the UK and because they were a very small team and because they were new at this, you can see why this stumbled out of the gates, because with things like Ninja Turtles and The Simpsons, it was all a concerted effort to be like, let's get the TV show on the air and roll out the merchandise immediately and find other licensing opportunities. With Battletoads, you can see like there were only three figures. They're not very good. There was no official comic. The pilot for this cartoon that was never made came way too late. It was all of these things. You could tell the IP wasn't being handled by people who knew how to successfully market something like this.
In fairness, I think that was pretty common back then. You know, these massive crossover franchises, you know, mass market saturation, that was pretty new. I mean, Batman really kind of defined that. And then, you know, you had Ninja Turtles the next year and the Dick Tracy movie. Like, if you are old enough to remember comic books around that time and magazines and so forth, like Dick Tracy ads were inescapable. Mm-hmm. But that was still a pretty new thing. Like the idea of just carpet bomb the, you know, everyone, just put everyone on blast, didn't really happen for anything outside of Star Wars at that point. So it was, you know, I can forgive them for not really getting it because people were still figuring it out. We lived in a more innocent time. It wasn't the media hellscape that we're trapped in now.
It is true.
Plus it was based on like a video game first rather than like the reverse, like have a video game based, like a video game based on a Bucky O'Hare or, you know, yeah, even the Ninja Turtles. So it was a weird way to go about it, where let's create the game first, but still with the intention of merchandising like the crap out of it, which, yeah, I never saw. Like you mentioned all those things that kind of didn't really get off the ground. And I didn't even know that there was like a failed pilot until the internet, basically.
Same here.
I just let me know that it existed. So I was flabbergasted. Like, wow, they tried to make the Toads. Like when I hear that there was a Bubsy cartoon, I'm just like, absolutely not. Someone made this up as a joke.
Yeah, I mean, it's online officially. The people who made it just put it online so you can watch the Battletoads cartoon. But when you look at the Battletoads and you look at Ninja Turtles, they didn't really steal enough, because you can see how the Turtles, why they were a success. Because it's like there's great theming and that they all have different colors. They all have, different weapons. So immediately, they're distinct the second you see them, even though they're identical characters. They also each have their own personalities that are distinct. This is not true of the Battletoads. They they don't have distinct weapons. They kind of look different, but not enough in a way to make you say, oh, that's my favorite. And obviously, they really can't have personalities. And we'll talk about this as we talk about different games, in that in every game, there is seemingly a different origin story, and the one that they kind of eventually figure out is not very satisfying. So I feel like that's something you need from the beginning when you're doing this kind of massive IP for kids. It's like you need to have a Bible saying this is where the characters came from and here's who they are and here's who their friends are. The universe is simply not big enough. There's a villain. It's kind of their version of the Shredder. It's a dominatrix. But again, there's no other characters outside of that. There's like some villains, but they're also not defined and they're not very interesting.
Guy, I always forget his name.
Robo Manus.
Yeah.
I think that's his name.
Silas Volkmeyer.
The Master Splinter.
Oh, Professor T-Bird. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know all of these way too well. I'm ashamed of myself. I just think kids don't want to buy a big black action figure. It's just a big rat wearing like pants. Nobody wants that.
I don't like big black.
It's not. And big black just sounds too British as well. It's like, I'm gonna go on a big black, mate. So no one wants to hear that.
It's like calling a character Captain Bollocks, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Now that would have sold. I would buy that right now.
I'd buy that too.
And also
a more adult version of Captain Underpants.
Also, Zitz and Pimple are the same thing, kind of. So you need more variety there. And yeah, I just feel like, and even when I was a kid, I could tell the people who made this game were kind of being derisive of the Ninja Turtles. Like, oh, can you believe how stupid this is? How easy is this to do? We can just do our own and make it very dumb and have them all named after like skin conditions. It's that easy. So I feel like going into this, it's a creation that's also already like openly cynical and derisive towards the thing it's trying to rip off, which means it can't really succeed on its own terms.
I think one factor is like, with the turtles, no matter how you feel about them, I guess it could be like you could pick the games up and be like, which turtle do you want to be? Who do you want to be? And in Battletoads, I don't think you can do that until the Double Dragon game. It's basically just, who do you want to be? Oh, well, you can't be Pimple. That's not an option.
So what you're saying, Bob, basically is that in being so condescending toward the thing that it's satirizing, it's basically Shrek 10 years early.
Ooh, yes. Although I don't know which I like worse.
Large green protagonist doesn't hold up well. ironically popular in hindsight.
That is true. Yeah, this is the Shrek of video games, I think. And
I think we solved it.
I think like a lot of people missed Ninja Turtles in that what they missed about it was that it already was a parody, and I think that escaped a lot of people because that was not really clear in the cartoon, which was the most famous interpretation of the turtles. But it's weird that people are parodying this thing that was already a parody of Frank Miller comics. So in a way, it's like, oh, you kind of didn't get it.
Yeah, but you weren't meant to, like, depending on your age. It was always going to go over it. Like, there's lots of things Raphael would say. Like, I didn't understand breaking the fourth wall. So when Raphael would, I was like, is he talking to me? Like, I didn't even have a concept of, like, how cartoons are really big. Me, it's really, I'm a Ninja Turtle too. But the only thing the Battletoads, like, lacked, even from the games, because the games don't really mention it, sort of, they don't have their food of choice.
Yeah.
Which I think you can eat flies, but that doesn't count because that's actually realistic for what they are. But the fact that biker mice ate chili dogs, Sonic ate chili dogs, and the Street Sharks ate hamburgers, like they did not have their food of choice. And therefore, they will never have that marketing synergy. Like you can't sit down and watch Battletoads or play Battletoads and eat flies. It just doesn't work. Rare. I sure hope someone got fired for that blunder.
In terms of marketing this to kids, you're right. That's one of the things they missed out on. So we have like things like colors and weapons and personalities and like a favorite food, even catchphrases. There is not a catchphrase. I mean, I was looking at the early comic and I think the catchphrase,
you get mad, bad, and crazy, dude.
Mad, bad, and totally crazy was their catchphrase.
Yeah, but something like that.
That's also, I don't think that's present in the games. It's just a real hodgepodge of just different ideas floating around. But for as cynical as this was, it wasn't cynical enough. They didn't do their homework enough to be enough of a ripoff to be successful outside of the first game.
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it a bit later, but like for colors and making more identifiable personalities, that happened, but way too late.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe the arcade game, and after that, not really. And then even way after that, like last year, they did it with the Battletoads reboot, but that was 20 years too late. You needed to have all that framework, like you said, when the first game came out, or actually have the cartoon launch and give you more of that then. But they were way too late, like you said, and they mishandled it. So yeah, they don't have much in terms of personality. And Let's Go Totally Crazy is really good, but they don't say it in the game, and that was the main avenue that people had to see these characters. It just didn't work out.
So going back to the production of the first game, there's a bit about it on Rare Replay. You can watch these videos. They've all been uploaded to YouTube. But a few facts about Battletoads. Originally, it was going to be called Amphibians with a Z, or a Z if you're in the UK or Canada. And originally, their idea for the game visually was very fluid animation. But since they couldn't necessarily do that on the NES, they opted for the exaggeration of the limbs and the heads, which is what you see in the final game. So it's like, if we can't make large, well-animated characters, which would be in future games, we can at least have these flourishes for big attacks. And that's how it was interpreted later in the games. And yes, this game is exceptionally difficult because there was no focus testing really at the time, and it was tuned to the abilities of the people who made the game. And I think the story on Rare Replay is the software engineer would basically fine-tune a level until he could beat it, and then he would make it a little bit harder on top of that. So this game was designed to be difficult to the people who made it. This was not play-tested by a general audience. We did not really do that at this point in time. At least Rare didn't do it, and it wasn't a common practice, I don't think.
And it's worth mentioning that the people who made it were battle-hardened. They were,
yes,
like, calloused, just hateful, cynical people after, you know, a decade of video game abuse. So it's not even just that it's the people who made it. It's that, you know, made by the people who made it, who are monsters.
Exactly, exactly. because they are from the UK, and they grew up with brutally hard microcomputer games, not only playing them, but making them. So what they see as a difficult game is different than what we see as a difficult game, or what someone in Japan would see as a difficult game. So already they have the unfair advantage in just being battle-hardened by all of these very, very blisteringly difficult games. So the general design of Battletoads was inspired by Double Dragon, and that would make sense because later they would cross over thanks to Trade West. And the U.S. launch got a big push by Nintendo Power. And this was a big summer game right before the launch of the Super Nintendo in America. That would launch in America in August. This was, I think, a July video game. So like just right before the launch of the SNES in America. Of course, it had been out in Japan for quite some time, but we wouldn't have known that or wouldn't have been able to play it unless we were really cool. And yes, despite Rare's plans for the series, this was basically a four-year phenomenon. And after the first game, I don't think anyone really cared that much. I mean, kids in my school and kids that would play games with me, we thought the first Battletoads was kind of neat. But after that first game, I just played the rest of them out of curiosity. Like, oh, I wonder what they're doing now. Because I just was just like, I felt obligated to see this through because it did feel like, well, this could be a Turtles thing maybe if I play it enough.
The answer was no.
No, it wasn't.
For me, it was kind of the beginning of my NES swan song. There weren't many games that I bought for NES after this. Mega Man 4 came out that Christmas, and I got that for Christmas and was like, I think I might be over this. And I don't remember. I must have bought some games in 1991 because, you know, I didn't buy a Super NES until summer of 92. But I can't remember anything that I really played for NES at this point. It was just kind of like, it just felt like, you know, everything was kind of getting a little long in the tooth. And I think this was an example of that. Like, visually, this is one of the best looking games on the NES.
Oh, yeah.
Things it does, the parallax scrolling, the hilarious, you know, at the time, animations, exaggerations of characters delivering their death blows, the way it would shift perspectives. I mean, you fight the first boss from the perspective of the first boss. Like, stuff like that was really cool and really innovative on the hardware. But at the same time, I don't know. I just didn't. This game did not have a spark of magic. You know, it did not spark my joy. as much as I devoted myself to it and played it, it just didn't quite click the way that something like Metroid or Bionic Commando or Mega Man 2 had.
I guess it's so varied that there's no mechanical complexity because the controls are constantly like changing, or the perspective is constantly changing. So if you get good at the brawling bits, it doesn't really matter because there's only about two of them in the whole game.
Yeah.
And then you, because then it's just like, okay, but now you've got to run away from stuff and everything's going to kill you in one hit anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You play perfectly or you just don't bother.
Yeah, the we can talk about this when we break down the levels, but the a lot of the stages in here demand a precision that the controls and the character designs just don't allow. And when you're trying to drop down holes and basically like run as fast as possible and be as precise as possible and like pull back around as you fall so that you can shave a pixel or two off your drop distance, these controls just aren't good for that. You've got these big floppy character feet. Like what is the collision detector? Like, where's the edge? How do you like, what counts as stepping over the edge? It's very frustrating.
Yes. Cause like Stuart said, it's, you have brawling bits and then you have platforming bits, but you're never doing one for too long. It's not like Mega Man where you can get good and, you know, in a short period of time. As a kid, though, when I was playing it, I remember being like pretty amazed at those changes, and you didn't notice those little things that Jeremy just kind of outlined because you're just having fun. But you go back to it now, you can kind of see why this isn't, you know, in terms of how it plays like an NES classic. It is because of the marketing and how Nintendo Power kind of pushed it and how this is Rare's like big coming out party, essentially. Well, I mean, I guess they had a few more years of a couple more Battletoads games before they really picked up with like Donkey Kong Country. But I remember being pretty enamored with this technically because I didn't get my Super Nintendo until way late. Well, like my parents were just like, no, you don't need a Super Nintendo. But when the Donkey Kong Country set that came with the Super Nintendo came out, that's when I got it. So that was like late 94. So I was on my NES for a while. And there wasn't a lot to play after that point. Once the Super Nintendo had been out for a few years, but it was only until like you're old enough to go back to the NES, like let's say in your like early 20s, you're like, oh, there's an NES at a flea market. I'll just buy it and play through some games. I remember I did something like that, or like a friend had an NES and he had Battletoads, and that was like the first time I played it since I was a kid. And that's when I started to see those little things you just mentioned, like, yeah, this feels just a little not that polished in terms of this area. There's all this ambition, but it just doesn't hold up all that well, like, gameplay-wise.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of the Earthworm Jim games. I think those games are a little easier, but in that, like, every level is a different idea, but none of them are developed enough to be that great or fun. And some of them are just very unfair and difficult.
I think this game works really well when it's just a brawler.
Yes.
But it's just a brawler so rarely that you don't really get to enjoy those parts. And you're thrust into like a race or like doing some crazy platforming that, you know, if you had Mega Man controls and precision would be challenging. But here with these like floppy footed giant toad dudes, so, so frustrating. I can't believe I actually like beat my head against this game until I finished it. It's,
well,
I'm impressed.
Like childhood, man, it's wild.
Before we talk about, sorry, Stuart, go ahead.
Just to expand on that, really, is other than Ragnarok's Canyon, the first stage, and the beginning of the Turbo Tunnel, only like the first minute of the Turbo Tunnel, I'm pretty sure that the whole rest of the game is just one mistake and you're done. I don't think there's any leeway from that point to the end. It's just completely demanding.
That's absolutely true.
And co-op doesn't make it any easier because of how you share lives. Like I didn't play that many like things on my NES with like friends. It was only when we got like everyone got 16-bit consoles where that was more, I just have a memory of everyone playing more co-op stuff then. But for this, it like did not make it. I think it's harder in co-op. Someone told me like it's actually the way it works. It's better to play in single player than co-op.
Yeah, I think there's friendly fire in co-op. I didn't play co-op for this podcast, but I think you can hurt your friend when you're playing with them if you punch too close to them or attack too close to them. I think there is friendly fire in this game. But I mean, okay, yeah. So there's not much.
That's what makes a brawler fun.
There's not much more history to go over in terms of Battletoads because like 1991 is the first game. 1994 is the arcade game. The arcade game does so poorly that Trade West is like, we don't care anymore. And all of the ports of the arcade game for home systems are canceled. The Game Boy One is finished. and it's just never released. But apparently it's finished. It's bug-free. They have it at Rare. I don't know if it's been leaked or not. But and then in 2020, there's the relaunch Battletoads, which did relaunch with some merch. So the game came out in 2020 in the fall. There was a 3-issue comic series, and also Fangamer did some merch. And I must say that I have been compromised because my wife, Nina Matsumoto, did the cover of the first comic, I believe, and also the hoodie and the speeder bike pin for Fangamer. So all of my opinions are
really
tainted.
I want the hoodie. I saw the hoodie, and I'm like, oh, that looks so cool, though.
The hoodie is some great, like, 90s skater gear.
Yeah.
I will say there was a very small amount of merchandise made available like 5 or 6 years ago at Comic-Con, back before the video game vinyl craze really took off. IM8-Bit published the Battletoads soundtrack on vinyl. I bought a copy of it, which I wish I had kept because it's probably worth a whole lot of money now. But the great part about it was that it had a gatefold cover, even though it was a single disc. And when you opened it up, it had a sound chip inside that played the pause theme.
I was going to say,
you'd open it up and it would just go.
That's so great. I was going to ask
over and over. So good.
I was going to ask if just one side of the LP was the pause music and that's it.
I don't remember. I didn't have a record player accessible at the time. Like if they didn't do a locked groove with this, the pause theme, they missed their opportunity.
You don't need
like
a record player. All you need to do is open it and listen to that pause theme for
hours. Yeah, basically that's what I did.
Yeah.
That pause theme has got to be on Spotify. If it's not, somebody upload it. But let's talk about...
I think I gave that to someone. So I'm very generous and you're welcome.
I think I fell in love with someone listening to that pause music once.
Wow. It does inspire emotions. But let's talk about the first game. So yes, June 1991 for the NES. The plot, there's a bit of a plot in that this game, I totally forgot Battletoads has a princess character. There's Princess Angelica. So not only is Angelica kidnapped, but also Pimple as well, the larger, burlier Battletoad. And they've been kidnapped by the Dark Queen.
Been too big for the NES, basically.
I think that's why you can't play as him. So yeah, he's kidnapped. Angelica's kidnapped by the Dark Queen, which is the not safe for work villain of the series. And I think that's one of the reasons this didn't succeed, because you can beat up Shredder. It's hard to end a game with beating up a woman, and they do it in this one, but you'll notice you don't beat up the Dark Queen in the other games as much. They usually have a bigger stand-in, so I feel like there's a too sexy character that's already a problem, but then she's also a woman, and that's hard to justify as your last boss in a game where you're just beating people up constantly.
I seem to remember her sprite being very large, and you have the moves such as headbutting, so you're like headbutting this large woman in the boobs, and it's looking back, it's a little off-putting.
I mean, it really feels like she's the Evil-Lyn to Skeletor, but there's no Skeletor in the Battletoads universe. Like, she is the Skeletor as well as like the Evil-Lyn. So even if you she falls off something or she gets defeated in some other less violent way, it's like, well, no, but there's no other boss after that. Sorry. So they kind of like wrote themselves into a corner. It's nice that it's different at that time. Like, oh, it's a female that's the final boss. Yeah, I mean, she looks like that, but it's 91 and you're a kid and you're just like, oh, that's cool.
I mean, I think they were going for the 80 2000 style kind of thing.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
The British connection there.
Yes,
makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really confused who the big bad of Battletoads is, because it's different in almost every game, I think. It's Volkmire in the second one, because you fight the Dark Queen by hitting her in the face with your hand, which is also an anvil, over and over again, which is horrible. Then you've got a QTE end boss with Volkmire. Then in the Game Boy game, it's Robo Manus. It's on like, it's always different.
Yeah, I think the arcade game, you might fight Robo Manus in the end too. But she's not a consistent villain. And it also made her harder to depict in children's media. Because if you look at the Nintendo Power comic that is made to set up the story of the Battletoads, I reread it for this, and in every panel, she's just covering up her chest with her cloak, and it's very awkward because she has to do it in a somewhat natural way, but she's always either posed away from the camera or just covering herself up for no reason. But in the cartoon, she is still a sexy character, and she's still she's not covering herself up. So I will say maybe that's why the cartoon didn't get made past one episode. Mm. So this game, I didn't know this until doing research, but the Famicom version came out later. It's got a pretty cool cover, but this seems like the ideal version if you want an easier game, because I linked it in our notes. This has like 100 different changes in terms of level design that Japan looked at this game and said, you must make this at least manageable. And look, I didn't play the Famicom version, but looking at the changes, I was like, these are all good changes, because I didn't replay the game for this podcast because I'm not a superhuman, but upon watching a Let's Play, I was starting to get outraged. Like, I can't believe they expected somebody to do this. It's not fair.
Yeah. I read that, and every single change sounds good. Like, I wish that they had backported that to Rare Replay so I could play that version.
Yeah, that's...
Wow, I just looked up the Famicom version on eBay to see what it's selling for, and it's a pretty penny, so...
The definitive version of Battletoads, NES.
Play it however you like, mateys.
And we're back, folks, with another episode of Nasty Labs.
Nasty Labs.
It's a show hosted by me, Kinsey Burke, and my dumbass friend Mark.
Nasty Labs.
This twice-monthly show about game development, Japan life, being nice to people, and hey, maybe a few other things.
Nasty Labs
is a product of Chuhai Labs Brand Incorporated, and now available for three easy payments of $420.69, only on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Hi, we're Ellen,
Steven,
and Mark,
hosts of Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
Topics include programming, design, tools, and more.
We also do interviews and one-hour game jams.
Listen to Nice Games Club wherever you get to your podcast. You get there. Or at nicegames.club.
But we can break down the levels because, again, I only have experience with the first three because I only ran in the game. But they all have names, too. So the first one is Ragnarok's Canyon. And again, Jeremy, you're correct. And I think we all agree that the best Battletoad stuff is brawling. And it's essentially a brawler with some light platforming. You get to ride like a little pig demon creature in a way I don't think you do later in the game. And the first boss like sets it up in a very cool way where it's like, oh, the NES can't do huge sprites, but here's a way to sort of like theater of the mind it, where the boss, you see one leg enter the screen and then you switch to the first person perspective of the boss. And I think Turtles in Time would come out later and do a similar idea in that you're seeing things from the boss's perspective and you're throwing things at the screen.
It's such a cool idea. I do have a question, though. Is that boss Ragnarok? Is that character named Ragnarok?
It's not really clear who is piloting that machine or what it even is. I don't know if that's ever defined. It's just like you see one leg and then you see a view screen from the person's perspective. But they should not throw a ball at you that you can throw back. That's the one fatal flaw in their plan.
It's one of the classic blunders.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, level one, everything's going smooth sailing. I can do this. I'm 9 years old. I can finish this level. Everything's cool. Then we get to stage two. It's called Wookiee Hole. And yes, they are allowed to do that because no one was looking too closely at these games. And I do like this level. It's cool because you're going down this chasm.
I watched a Let's Play as like you did, but like when I first saw this, I was just like, oh, that's so cool. The second level is different, but then when every level is different, then there is no level like there's the game doesn't really have an identity, like we said. But yeah, just when the wiki hole starts, you're just like, oh, that's so neat because you're not expecting it as a kid.
And there's some cool effects in this. I like how you can kind of feel like sense the gravity and the weight of things. Like when you're these crow enemies, you can whack them. You can keep whacking them and smacking them against the wall to get more and more points and one-ups. And if you hold yourself against the wall, you can turn into a bell to smash across the screen. And there's such a great feeling of impact and weight. Like still at this point, it's a manageable game that is still pretty easy to play. It has a lot of cool tricks and is pretty fair in my opinion. So yeah, level two, good stuff. And now
yeah,
we get
level two is like I feel like you kind of have to bungle this stage. It's actually pretty easy, and I find that, you know, the way I would fail at it most often is just by trying to grind for one ups. So, you know, if you're not doing that, it's really breezy, like almost deceptively so, almost cruelly so. It gives you the wrong impression.
I want to point out that Wookiee Hole is named after a cave formation in the east of England, because no one else is ever going to point that out on anything.
Oh,
wow, that's why you're here.
So they changed it to Wookiee as in, you know, Chewbacca Wookiee instead of Wookiee.
No, there's only one E, apparently. So
oh, really?
It's legally distinct from the trademarked name.
They can't
Wookiee.
Sue.
Oh, then it's fine. Then it's fine. Yeah.
So now we get to Turbo Tunnel, and my theory is, and I don't think Rare, this is me speculating, but 1990-1991, those were big years in which I feel like games were pushing back in a very hard way against the rental market. Lots of games from Japan were made much harder, especially in 1990-1991. And to me, level 3 feels like, okay, the trial version of this game has expired if you're renting it. Level 3 is like the rental check. Did you buy this game? Well, you might see the rest of the game. You might see the you know, remaining 9 levels. If you rented this game ends at level 3. So I feel like even if Rare did not design it that way, that's just how this game works.
Yeah, it's the shareware portion of the game.
Yeah.
It's the part of the game that everyone knows. Even if they've never played a video game, they somehow know about it.
I mean, that's why, like, even when the Battletoads get, like, cameos in later things, like Shovel Knight or Killer Instinct, the speeder bikes are there because it's so synonymous with it's more synonymous with the franchise than almost punching the brawling bits.
I'm not sure if it's too sort of obtuse to point out, but it's kind of the first level has a warp right at the beginning that warps you to the Turbo Tunnel, which is one of the famous warps, and it's like, don't take the warp, go to level 2 and farm all the lives. It's a trap. It's a Kaizo trap. Don't do it.
But then level 3 does have a warp pretty early on in the turbo tunnel racing section. So if you, it's like 5 or 6 obstacles in, and if you,
it is the 10th one.
Oh, the 10th one. Okay.
Yeah, I think
well,
it's
5
the
plus
one.
6, that's almost 10.
I've hit that warp by accident so many times.
But I mean, that warps you past level 3 and to, you know, equally difficult in different way type stages. But I will say that this is going to sound like I'm, you know, making up my uncle from Nintendo. But when I beat this game, the time that I beat this game, I beat it by not warping, because I found that when I warped, there are several warps throughout the game. I found that it would just like throw my concentration or my, like I would be get into the zone and then I would warp and I would lose that, you know, whatever groove I was in, and end up, you know, maybe making it to the next to last stage. One time I even got like midway up the final tower and ran out of continues, which was just infuriating. But you know, mastering this goddamn tunnel and learning all the stupid jumps and double jumps and like, you know, untelegraphed tricks and things like that, that's the way to beat the game. Like you enter the zone, you fall into a Zen trance going through the turbo tunnel, and that can power you through the remainder of the game. And I will never abuse myself that way again. That is in the past.
Also, the early warps skip you past the levels that have the easiest one-ups to get as well. Like the Ice Caverns is quite a difficult level, but it has a lot of free one-ups that you can get.
What I don't like about this level, I mean, obviously the speeder bikes suck, and I don't like that at all, but I hate how it starts off with this just preliminary brawling stuff to get you in a different mood. I wish it had just started off, here are speeder bikes, ride them, because when you have to replay this level, you have to do these like perfunctory brawling things that aren't fun. I mean, it's more fun than speeder bikes, but you just want to get to the pain so you can overcome it. And I hate that there's this weird little preamble with like these space invader enemies and these rats you have to like punch into the ground. I just want, just give me the pain first and let me try to get through it. And that's not what this level does. And other vehicle levels also have
this,
like...
This is like, it's very much like the unskippable 5-minute cutscene before a multi-phase final boss in an RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is this level also has the space invaders that steal your health. Is that a thing that I?
Oh yeah, that? Yeah. Those are a thing.
Taito's space invaders fly onto the screen, up into the status bar, steal your health, and carry it off. And you basically can't get it all back. It's just you lose some health. Yeah. Not that it matters, because if you hit an obstacle, you die anyway, but it's still insult to injury.
They make Space Invader noises in a way that feels not legal completely, but... Yeah, and then, so watching this, what I hate most about Turbo Tunnel is that watching the playthrough brought me right back to trying to play this over and over again, is that at first it seems reasonable, but then it immediately becomes unreasonable and only gets worse from there, and it does go on far too long, and it does feel like they should have brought in someone who didn't make the game to try this level out, because that will be a recurring problem throughout the rest of this very long and varied game, is that I feel like an outside perspective was needed to let them know, like, this is not a reasonably difficult game.
Yeah, I think games of this era, like 8-bit and 16-bit, whenever there's like a bonus mode or like, you know, like a different type of thing that you're doing in between the main thing that you're doing, the best option is to keep them brief, because the longer they go on, the less interest, you know, someone would have. And the only reason the Turbo Tunnel keeps interest is because it's so hard. So either going to be short and easy or like long and hard. And then Rare is just like, well, we're gonna go with the latter here. And I on the Rare Replay Collection, does anyone, because it's, I even though I have that collection, I watch all the interviews, I don't remember, do any of them actually talk about the Turbo Tunnel specifically?
I think they do. I think I don't really remember. I know that they, I can't imagine that they wouldn't, you know, it seems like have to, it would be the elephant in the room.
Yeah, I think they said they got to the point where they could almost do it blindfolded, but they couldn't get that far. So they were a little too close to this to realize how difficult it was.
Yeah.
And I mean, we are lingering on this because it is the one thing people talk about the most, but we weren't ever, in 1991, we weren't really talking about difficulty. There was no discourse about it. It was considered like, ooh, this game's got a high challenge factor and things like that. And if you were a kid in 1991 and this game was, you know, kicking your ass, you would say like, oh, I'm just not good at this, or it's too hard for me. It would never be the game's fault. But I think we all realized, like, much later in life, like, oh, that game was too hard and unfair. I don't think we were thinking of that in the moment. I just thought, you know, not getting past stage 3, like, oh, I need to get better at this. Not like, there are ways this is not fair to me, the person who has to interface with everything you're giving me here.
I think if you're not playing it, it's really funny, like, to actually see just how kind of assholeish it gets.
Yeah.
Like, you'll get The gates that preview, but they appear in the opposite side of where they're going to actually land. Then you get the bits where there are no ramps and you have to suddenly jump across the terrain, which is not in any way implied. That's going to kill you the first time it happens, guaranteed.
That's,
and then, of course, the ultimate, which is when they just go, okay, no more previews, and also the speed's going to go up by about 4 times. And it's going to go on for, like, a full minute of just this. You have to go into a complete trance state to even get past that. I don't think that you
even,
I don't think there's any way to really plan for it.
Yeah.
I would have really liked it if, just for Battletoads, GamePro could have reviewed it and had challenge factor added as a special category just for Battletoads. And it's the really excited little GamePro face where his hair is going all
exploding head one, yeah.
Yeah, I guess, I don't think Howard, it's Howard Phillips, right? The Game Master?
Yep.
He was not with Nintendo at this point, I don't think.
He was gone.
We could not ask him if he finished this game.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He's like, I'm out, guys. I'm going to try Valiant Comics.
You know what the thing is, though? Despite all of this, I bet the Amiga version is worse. I bet the Amiga version is harder.
Yeah, there are lots of ports, and some of the ports don't actually do this level because they just can't get it working on different hardware. Like, only Rare could get this working on the NES, and I think some of the ports don't actually have this level in it, like the Game Boy game does not have this in it. But yeah, there's a reason why this is so notable. There's a reason why it is this cultural touchstone. There's a reason why the Fangamer merch you can buy is a little toad on the speeder bike, like the one in my background here that's just like holding on for dear life. And I don't know, I think people call it the speeder bike level, but I don't know if they ever use the term speeder bike in the game or in like the instructions or anything like that. I don't know why we call it speeder bike, but it's Turbo Tunnel. That's the official title.
That might have been a Nintendo Power invention.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Because they're not...
I wonder if T-Bird says it. I skip all his dialogue, so I have no idea.
Could be, yeah. But, I mean, they're like hovercraft, so they're not bikes. But, yeah, that's level 3. There is a level 4. There's video proof. and that's Arctic Cavern. So it's not a brawler anymore. It's not a racing game anymore. It's more of like what feels to me inspired by Super Mario Brothers 2, in that a lot of the action is your Toad has to pick up things and carry them and use those things to break down barriers. And this is also the introduction of insta-kill spikes, which will become a huge factor in upcoming levels. And yeah, again, they're playing around with a new kind of take on a genre here, and that there's not a lot of brawling, but still, it's not that great.
There are bits where you have to pick up these ice floes that are on the ground and throw them at walls, so they rebound, and if you hit the side of them, that's it, you're dead. Then there are bits where they're already moving, so you have to jump on them, land on them to make them stop moving, and then pick them up. But if you are even slightly off, you're just down and you lose a life. And it's truly horrible. it's so unenjoyable.
And it's funny that it's such a Battletoads touch that, like, what is our first and only platforming level? It's an ice level. You're going to be sliding around. So that feels like an extra bit of Battletoads Ash Holelessness to add to this whole equation.
I mean, you make the Mario 2 comparison with the stuff you're throwing around, but Mario 2 also, you know, the World 4 has slippery ice and it has spikes, but it never felt as hateful. I mean, for one thing, you could play as like the princess and hover, but it also had those little like M cannons that would roll back and forth, and you could hop on those and go across the ice on those or the spikes. I don't know. I just felt like this stage doesn't give you any leeway whatsoever. I mean, that's kind of the message of this entire game. But it's just hateful.
It's like, are you proud of yourself? Sorry, Stuart, go ahead.
I think there's one particular part that springs to mind where you fall. You have to stand on an ice platform that then falls at about like the Terror Tower at Disneyland or whatever it's called. And then you jump off that through both ceiling and ground spikes that are so low that if you jump too high, you will die.
Yeah. That's the end of the stage, I think. So, like, they immediately want to kill you for making it that far.
Even better.
Sorry, this is a little bit of a jumping back in terms of topics, but I looked up the Battletoads issue of Nintendo Power, and it turns out that was the final issue with Howard Phillips as editor.
Oh.
So literally, this game
just drove him away.
He was like, no, I'm going to Lucasfilm Games where they create games that never kill you. I've had enough of this shit. I'm out.
Have you played Super Empire Strikes Back, Jerry?
No. You know, this was the era of like, they didn't make that anyway. That was like JDC.
Oh, right. I got confused by the Lucasfilm thing.
Right.
Games, right?
I see what you mean.
Maniac Mansion.
Where you literally can't die.
Yep. So anyway,
yeah,
that's a fun fact.
He retired. He said, I'm supposed to finish all these games before we publish them, but I have to leave the company now. It's just not going
to
happen.
Regards to Nestor. he can deal with this crap.
So yeah, that was stage 4. Again, yes, things are getting more difficult. Stage 5 is Surf City. It's another vehicle section like in stage 3, only in this one, it's not as fast paced. You can see the obstacles coming, but they take up more space. You have less room to maneuver. And for some reason, it's in the middle. You have a brawling section, and that's where the boss is, in the middle of the stage. And then you have more of the vehicle section afterwards. It's very, very odd.
Yeah. I consider this to be basically a breather level because it's really not that bad compared to everything that comes after it, which is like living through a nightmare.
It did seem fairly easy compared to everything surrounding it, like the next stage, which these all have very strange names, implying that other things are named things that we never see. So this is Karnoth's Lair, in that I like the idea behind this. Like, the idea behind this could be a fun mini game in another game, or it could be a level in a game that's done in a better way. But in this one, it's a series of little stages in which you are riding snakes, or a series of snakes that are like sneaking around the stage. And of course, there's lots of ways to die, like falling to your death, lots of insta-kill spikes. And you have to climb on them, jump around them. You have to move as they move to get to the exit. And I feel
you
like...
You also can't touch their faces.
I didn't know that.
If their faces touch you, you'll die.
I didn't know that. And you know what?
Well, you have to avoid the snake faces. Yeah, right?
In general, you want to avoid snake faces, but in this game especially. And like, platforms have moved like this in other games, like in Mario, but I feel like Mario, they show you the track so you can actually see. Like, so in this stage, you can tell where the snake will go because that's where the head is moving, but the head is often off screen. So it feels like now more than ever in this game, you must have memorized the patterns to actually do this in a way that's possible.
Yeah, or they just make the snakes way less, like way smaller, then you could kind of see their path a bit better because they're so huge, though. Like, yeah, they, like you said, they constantly go off screen.
They make you, you have to hang back on the snakes until you almost have no space left just to see where you need to be going. Mm-hmm. And when there's instant kill spikes literally everywhere, it's awful.
I have heard the Rare developed game Snake Rattle and Roll is very good. But I have refused to play it on principle just because this is what it makes me think of. And this is such a hateful, frustrating stage.
Well, Snake Rattle and Roll is good. It's very good. Different compared
but
to
I
this,
don't trust but... Rare to create snakes in a way that doesn't make me want to die or kill someone at Rare.
They had that snake buddy in Donkey Kong Country 2. He's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, Rattly.
I don't like Donkey Kong Country 2 either. See, it's the snakes.
You just... What?
Yeah, all right.
And I think one thing...
So also really fast, another callback. I want to confirm that Nintendo Power did call the bikes speed bikes.
Speed bikes. So,
even though that may not be canon within the games, this is how so many people learned about the game, memorizing the jumps and everything. Like, I would not have beaten this game, I'm sure, without Nintendo Power's extensive maps. God bless whoever made that. They are a true hero.
They had to photograph all of those things.
These are photographed... screen maps. I don't know how they did it, but they're a goddamn monster. Just amazing. This person needs to be canonized.
We put speed holes in our bikes, makes them go faster.
That's true. Stuart.
Just because no one else is going to note this, and I'm sorry. I think Carnath is a callback to Ultimate Play the Game, which was what Rare used to be before they were Rare. A Commodore 64 game called The Staff of Carnath. And then Carnath himself, who is an actual named character, turns up in the arcade game and not once before.
Wow. Okay, so Carnath is real, apparently.
Yes.
And I think one thing that we might not even think about is that this snake thing is a pretty cool effect for an NES game. Like, lots of big sprites moving around in a very fast and smooth way. That is more interesting than how the levels are designed and how it actually plays. I think they're more interested in the effect than in, like, you know, how fun this was.
If you want to play a game that feels a lot better and has the exact same gimmick because they stole it, Bucky O'Hare for the NES has this exact thing. Snakes that you can ride around that are nearly impossible.
No thanks. Not going to play that. So we're on the stage 4, which is Volkmeyer's Inferno. Volkmeyer, do we know who that is?
Silas Volkmeyer is the final boss of Battle Maniacs.
Right.
The SNES game. It's implied he's the big bad, but they don't really do much to give
that's
that any
weird.
Weight.
I guess we forgot,
really,
like, some part of the lore that's involved with the comics of this, like, one comic in the Nintendo Power issue is that the Battletoads are actually three game testers who go into this VR game, and it's not actually a game. This VR system allows them to tap into a parallel world, so the humans are sucked into the world, and then on that side of the world, they're Battletoads, and they're stuck there. So that is essentially the lore that's not being told in the game, that you are human game testers stuck in a VR world that taps into the world of the Dark Queen, which is a real world. It's very, very complicated.
There has to be YouTube channels that specialize in Battletoads lore now.
Battletoads
Deep Dive. Blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And do you think that's like a meta commentary on the fact that this game was clearly not tested?
Oh my God, that's a good point. Yeah, why would they involve game testers in this? Yeah, it's all about fictional
characters all the way down.
Yeah, Rare, why are you not testing this? Because the testers are in the game. Wink.
But the reason I brought that up is because Silas Volkmeyer is the villain in the comic. He's like the evil programmer who alters the VR because the Dark Queen comes out of the game and does stuff. I don't know. I mean, you can read the comic. It's online. It's not very satisfying, but...
I'm good, thanks.
Yeah. This is...
I'm going to read it.
This is like the speeder bike section, but even worse in that you have more range of movement, technically, because it's sort of like a shmup, but... You have so many more things coming at you, so many more ways to die in this section. And again, it follows the same design as Stage 3 in that you have a little bit of a brawling section, but then you have this super intense dodging section in which things are flying at you from all over the screen. Mm. And it's just like the Spirit of Bike section, but a lot more difficult. And you're also still given like the slight tenth of a second of a warning when you're about to get hit by something. But that's it.
This does make the Turbo Tunnel look like, I don't know, Sesame Street
or
something. Like, it's, there's a bit towards the end. Basically, you have these gates that are made of electricity that are closing or opening. If they're closing, if you're not already all the way over to the right side of the screen at the exact spot where they intersect, you lose a life. If you don't know that's coming, you will die. It is completely unfair and horrible, and I can't help but just respect the hell out of them for doing it.
I will say that Life Force did the exact same thing in the escape sequence after the final boss. And, you know, if you were on your last life, that was pretty infuriating. But if you weren't on your last life, then you would respawn immediately, just past it, and, you know, you'd be through the game. But that's a really nasty way to end a very challenging sequence of events.
Yeah, one of many ways I was outraged during the Let's Play was seeing this level. Just like, you can't be kidding. Like, I have seen a long play of this before, just out of curiosity. Like, I want to see the remaining 70% of this game. But upon getting to this part, I'm like, God, I can't even imagine what I'd be thinking if I made it this far, only to be faced with this sort of thing.
And this is like halfway through the game, and all the rest of the levels are harder.
It's true. Let's go through more of them. So we have Intruder Excluder. So there's some interesting ideas in that it's a pure platforming level where you're going up a long vertical shaft instead of going down like you did in level 2. And it's a lot about avoiding projectiles and avoiding hazards, and through most of this it feels like kind of maybe like Donkey Kong-ish inspired or something, in that it's about a lot of platforming up girders and things like that, and there's like little moving gaps constantly going back and forth and avoiding like little hazards and stuff like that. But it does look very difficult, and it's like precision platforming in a game not designed for that.
One thing that you're reading through all these levels, and each one has a different gimmick, and since you just throughout the Donkey Kong name, it's like, it does, I don't think there was too much exchanging of staff members that worked on both Battletoads and Donkey Kong Country, because Battletoads Arcade was the same year as Donkey Kong Country released on the Super Nintendo. But you could see like the rare thing of, but honed so much better in Donkey Kong Country 1 and 2, where let's have a core like set of abilities for mobility, like jumping, rolling, barrel rolling, and blah, 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 blah. But each level gimmick has something different. Like after the first couple of levels in most Donkey Kong Country games, then every level has a different gimmick. But the level does, but you have the same tight controls, or much tighter than Battletoads. And that works really well. But now that we're going up a large vertical shaft, you're never prepared enough to do any of this stuff. And like, I don't even think as a kid I definitely didn't get this far ever. Even when I played this like a couple of years ago, I think I maybe got past the Turbo Tunnel. I think the snakes is the last thing I saw. I lost all my lives. But it's just amazing how like going down the list of levels, every single one is different.
The worst thing for me about Intruder Excluder is it's mentioned in the notes, there's platforms that move left and right with a gap in them. And basically, the way it works in this game is, when you want to jump through that gap to get onto the platform, it always blocks you. And later in the game, when you need to drop down through it, it's the exact opposite. It's whatever would be the least convenient thing possible. But the fact that you're scrolling up, unlike some of the early levels, if you drop down, you lose a life. You can't go back down, I don't believe. It's like sort of auto scroll, except vertical. Yeah, ratchet scrolling. Yeah. That's it. That's a great term, and it's new to me, and I'm learning much.
The games are very different, but watching the platforming this, it reminded me too much of Ice Climber. Just like, oh, it looks just so imprecise and painful. And you're totally right, Matt, about Donkey Kong Country. Like, they had Nintendo oversight, so they could not make a game like this. But also,
That's true.
The core set of skills in Donkey Kong Country, I feel like they can be carried from level to level. Like, just because you're good at level 3 of Battletoads does not mean you'll be good at level 6. Because, like, every game, every level is like a different different game with a different skill set required. So, like, beating that level, the last vehicle level, does not mean you're going to be good at Intruder Excluder. It's a completely new kind of game with a completely new kind of, like, scheme to learn.
Like, you need to play this game with a team of 12 people, each one specializing in that level.
Oh, God, those poor bastards.
The ultimate multiplayer experience.
They're all on death row, too. So,
and they're welcome for it.
Yes, they're waiting for the sweet kiss of death. So stage 9 is Terra Tube. So it is, as the game implies, it's a system of tubes you run through, but it is the always not fun idea of an insta-kill thing chasing you, which they will use again in the future in this game. So that's the first half of this level. The back half is a pretty bad swimming section with just insta-kill spikes everywhere. It makes the swimming section in the first Ninja Turtles game look like the easiest thing in the world.
Absolutely, when they were ripping off Ninja Turtles, they looked at that game and said, oh yeah, we can do worse than this. We can make you hate life. Like when I first played Donkey Kong Country and got to the swimming stage, like, I had PTSD from this. Like, it's seriously, like, those stages are, they're so peaceful with the music and everything, but I was just like, this is going to be like that Battletoad stage. This is the same people. This is going to be horrible. I don't want to do this.
There's a bit in this level that's so completely evil that it thrills me just to think about, where basically you're being chased by what's essentially a big cog through these tunnels. At the end, there are cubby holes and doors, and the cog smash into the doors while you hide in the little cubby holes. And then they don't. Then they stop doing that. And if you go in the cubby hole, the cog goes in the cubby hole and kills you, and the door explodes anyway. It's completely inexplicable and completely unfair. And once again, I do have to shake their hand for daring to put something so hateful into a video game intended for children.
Bold. What a bold game, Battletoads. Yeah.
There's so much audacity on display here. Yeah, and I would not believe, like, so I recently, well, not recently, like 10 years ago for Retronauts at 1UP, I played through Ninja Turtles the first couple of stages on a live stream, and I was like, oh, you know what? The damn one is not that hard, actually. I think it's been overestimated. I think people exaggerate how difficult it is. If you were to tell me any of these stages, oh, it's not too bad, I would not believe you. But that damn stage, it can be done, and there are ways to do it, but nothing is as punishing as what we're talking about here.
No, I've lived this. I can tell you, like, I really was traumatized by this game. I expected games to be this hateful for a while.
If the thing is, if you have played through this, you can say, by this game's standards, the Turbo Tunnel is not that bad. By the standards of every other game ever made, ever in history, it's terrible. It's the worst.
Yes.
At the same time, if they, they set out to make this hard, or, they didn't really realize how hard it was because they had to play it so much, it's like, I'm not even sure people would talk about Battletoads nearly as much if it wasn't this hateful, as we've been throwing around the term. Because if it was just really, like, easy breezy game, then I think it'd be even less remembered. And maybe they were right, because they botched the merchandising and the marketing, and, like, making the Toad seem like a cool character. Like, since that didn't seem to be handled that well, not that I think they designed it to be purposely hard because the IP was a bit mishandled, but it seems to have kind of worked out for what otherwise would have been, like, kind of not memorable title in the grand scheme of things, especially Rare's library.
I will present a counter argument, and that's Kirby's Adventure, which is a better designed game than this, but it is also a late NES game, has just technically excellent, it's a technically excellent game, and it's really pretty gentle. Like, it has some moments, but it's a, compared to this, it's like sleeping on a soft pillow. And that game is deeply beloved. The Kirby series has become an enduring franchise. For a while, up until recently, they were making, like, a new Kirby game every year. Kirby is, kind of a Nintendo mainstay. I think, it's perfectly possible for them to have made a game that was reasonably forgiving, not easy, but, balanced. And with all the things going for this game, the visual style, the graphical detail, the cool pause theme, the sheer variety of gameplay mechanics. I think this would be really fondly remembered, but instead it's like, oh, it's that game with the stupid turbo tunnel. I think it works against this game's legacy. I think that making a game that was like, I don't know, 30% less brutal and maybe gave you infinite continues would have, you know, really changed this game's reputation. So it's not infamous, but just beloved.
You're not wrong, but then the later Battletoads games did get a lot easier, and that didn't seem, or maybe like because it was so difficult the first one, maybe kind of ruined it from then on out. But all the rest of the Battletoads games, not nearly as punishing as this. I guess they knew.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ship had sailed by that point.
Yeah,
by the time you got the sequels.
I think
the litmus test is, what if you take this exact game, Battletoads for the NES, and replace the Toads with Kirby?
Kirby would get chewed up.
No, he's an eldritch god. He'd be fine.
I don't know if he'd survive level one. I feel like also if you're designing a game, especially today, like I feel game designers think, you know, I want my game to be challenging, but I also want people to be able to see all of the game because we worked very hard on it. And how many people just didn't see past level 3? I would say probably like 75% of the people who play this game conservatively just didn't see most of the things that they put into it. And it feels like that's not good if you're making the game. You want people to experience what you made.
Yeah, I think that's a good, you know, kind of makes a good case for the fact that they really didn't understand how horrible and awful the difficulty in this game is. Because, you know, a lot of times you see it a lot in arcades where, like, the first stage or two have all the ideas and then the rest of the game is just kind of like blah, because they don't really like, they just want to get people kind of upfront and get their quick, you know, quick income. Whereas here, like, it really feels like they wanted you to see all of this. Like, they saved the coolest gimmick, the coolest visual mechanic for the final stage. Like, you don't do that if you think, oh, no one's going to make it here. They just really blew it. They really misunderstood like the capabilities of the average child playing NES.
Yeah, I mean, but then why were a lot of Rare's games, like, I've never heard them be, you know, it's said to be very, very hard, all their NES catalogs. Some are obviously of an inferior quality, and they'd be unpleasant to play. But then why, like, out of all of them, why was this the one where the software designer was just playing it to his level of difficulty versus all of other Rare's output?
I feel like they were maybe just really sort of high on the idea of making their own kind of IP, and they wanted to throw all of themselves into it.
Yeah.
Is the one thing you can say about this game, no matter how much it kind of sucks because of how it turned out, there's a lot of passion in it. Like, it really feels like they cared about this game, I would argue.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like it's hard just by virtue of the fact that it got the most attention, and that attention involved fine-tuning it, which in their interpretation was making it as hard as possible, a challenge for the people who know where everything is going to go and what challenges await you.
It's weird that they just didn't decide to put it like a difficulty setting, like easy, medium, hard. Like, what? Why not just do that?
Hard is by the American version. Easy is by the Japanese version, I guess. And then you get 5 lives and 5 continues instead of 3 lives and 3 continues.
And the levels are altered drastically to make it way easier. Level 9 last. Level 10 is Rat Race. So it's just like level 8, except instead of going up, you're going down and you're racing a character. And usually in these games, you're like, well, naturally, the character you're racing will be a bit slower than the player. No, that's not true. He's actually faster.
I've played this game mostly using save states and rewind, but the levels I've beaten, I've thought to myself, with practice, I do feel like I could do them. Maybe not in one straight shot, but I could do them. There's no way I could do this. There's no way. It's horrible. I hate it so much.
It's one of those levels where this happens a few times. Like usually when you watch a long play, it's pretty flawless. Maybe a hit here or there. But no, the person playing this just died a few times. This is one of the levels where they just died.
If that rat gets past you, you can't win. That's from how it seems to me.
No, that's absolutely correct. This is like this is the stage that ended the game more often than not for me. Like, it's so hard. You have to play with absolute perfect precision. And this is not a game that really supports that. Like, the pixel precision you need is not compatible with the design. It's so frustrating. And yes, if the racket's ahead of you, past like the first maybe 20% of the stage, you're boned. That's it. It's over. And the stage goes on so long. And you have to have every single twitch, every single like platform, every single turn and bend in midair memorized. There are parts where you just have to drop without touching anything, without landing on anything, because if you do, the friction, the kind of landing and then falling off again will break your momentum and you'll lose. It's so unreasonable.
I wanted to mention those bits where you're dropping, because like psychologically falling through platforms and intentionally dodging flat ground is impossible. Like, you've got every part of your body wants to land on those platforms, but no. Plus, you've got to hit the rat, so he does this tiny little jump at specifically the end of these platforms, hits the wall and turns around. It's the only way to do it, and it's almost like an exploit, but you have to do it.
it's the worst.
It's the absolute pits.
Like
the Quickman laser beam trap in Mega Man 2 trained me for this, but it didn't prepare me.
No. Yeah, and
based
on the video I was watching, of course, I never got this far on my own, is that, hitting the rat will buy you like tenths of seconds, and maybe that will even help you, but still, you're not given any advantage. And what I think is most annoying about Battletoads is like you're always on the defensive. You're always avoiding things, dodging things. It's not a game that puts you on the offensive that often, which future games would do, which I feel like this is why this was not that appealing to me and why it's still hard to play now. It's like a dodging game for the most part.
It's not really battling anything. You're doing stuff. Just call it that.
In this level, they're not Battletoads. They're just Toads.
Dodgletoads. Yeah. okay, that's level 10. We're gonna get to the end of this soon. There are 12 stages. Again, this is true. There's recorded video of this. Clinger Winger. So this is another vehicle section, in that you are holding on to this sort of unicycle with wheels that's like dragging you along, and it involves following this track very precisely that snakes are on the level while this death orb is following you from behind. And of course, at the end of the stage, you fight the orb, and I say, why not fight the orb first and then take your time through the stage? Yeah. But no, it's Battletoads, and this has a big bug in that if you make it this far with two players, the game will just freeze. So
who actually did that?
No one has ever done it.
I don't think it's possible to actually make it here with two players, just because of the sheer chaos of the game, and you both have to be that good to make it this far. So they fixed that bug in the Rare Replay version. They fixed it for the Famicom, the European release, but it's still present in the original American release of this game.
Has someone ever done a two-player run of this game?
I know someone. I know Probably. Someone who has. They're called liars.
Oh, I've met them before.
I think... If memory serves, the gimmick for this level is that the orb is faster than you on straights, but it doesn't take corners quite as fast as you can. So you can get right towards the end of the level, be on the final straight, get caught up with, and be killed, and have to do the whole thing over.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
You know how I said Rat Race is the worst? This is also the worst. Every level is the worst.
The co-shareholders of the worst.
Yeah, this level feels like almost an apology for the previous level. The previous level is so baleful. It is just like, it is, a hate crime. It is miserable. Like, this one feels almost gentle by comparison. And the final stage, the crazy thing about the final stage is it's actually like surprisingly non-brutal compared to everything else in the game. It's such a weird relief.
The thing I observed about Clinger Winger is, if you're not playing it on original hardware, if you have input lag, it's really, really difficult because it really is entirely about those split second turns. And I was wondering just for such a long time, like, why is this impossible? Like, how are you supposed to do this? What am I doing wrong? And it turns out that having just the slightest little bit of input lag makes it almost impossible, because every corner you hit, you will stop for a split second. You will slow right down. It's awful.
I think every playthrough of Battletoads is a frame perfect playthrough, just because it has to be. Yeah. Otherwise, you will die completely.
Yeah.
And
I feel like something the game lacks. Sorry. I feel like something the game lacks is that, like, it needs Castlevania style level introductions, like on Rondo of Blood, that say like, "God, give me strength," or like, "You do not see this."
Yeah, I want to see people saying that.
One of the cool things that it does do that I like is a thing similar to Castlevania, in that before you go into the stage, you see this little blueprint that shows sort of where you are in the world to, like, convince you there is more things to come. And I do that.
I think that actually, you know, that has precedent in Rare's own work with Wizards and Warriors.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
And I looked it up, and in 2015, the Mexican runner and JC583 did a co-op warpless run of awesome, you know, for awesome games done quick. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out what the code is here. It's not a tool assisted attack or tool assisted play.
I have to watch
no
this.
No dev commentary, no handicaps. So they beat it in half an hour.
Wow, okay. I'm watching this over lunch today because I did not see that. I did not believe that was possible.
If anyone can do it, Mexican runner can.
Yeah, yep. They're great. So the final stage of Battletoads is stage 12, the Revolution, in that you climb up the Dark Queen's Tower. It's a very cool graphical effect before Kirby's Adventure did the same thing, in that you're going up this tower. It's convincingly spinning as you're going up. And one thing about Battletoads I didn't mention is that, like, the enemies are not very iconic, and they're often very lame in some cases. Like, one level, there's these, like, evil rubber duckies that are floating around. In this stage, the enemies are these, like, the little guy you see in the corner of old maps blowing the wind. It's a lot of those guys floating around just trying to knock you off of platforms.
Is that Zephyr?
I think so.
But it makes sense because you're on, you know, a tower, so the wind is trying to blow you off. I will say, though, that this mechanic, or this visual gimmick, I think dates back to Castellian in the mid-80s, that kind of rotating, you know, fake rotation. So, you know, kind of some precedent there. But at the time that I got to the final stage, one, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. But two, I was like, wow, I've never seen this before. This is awesome. I don't need a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
It was very impressive for the time.
This is the bleeding edge tech right here.
I think, as
you said, it's surprisingly not that bad compared to the previous levels. It's not a breather, but it has some cruel traps. Like there are those, we didn't mention them at all, but there are weapons you can pick up, like, super early in the game, like poles. And on this level, those poles come back. You pull them off the wall, but there are bits where you're supposed to not do that. You're supposed to hold on to them, and then this little goblin thing will appear and blow wind at you. And if you're holding on to that pole, you will survive. If you've already pulled it off to use it as a weapon, as you have been encouraged to do, then you will be killed.
And you're reminding me of some things, yes.
Yes, I'm sorry, I don't mean to bring up these bad memories.
I did it to myself.
This game is all about bad memories. And yeah, you reach the top of the tower, you fight the Dark Queen. This feels like the only boss fight that actually has design behind it, because outside of the first one, because there are boss fights in this game, but it feels like you just do your attack on the enemy, and then they bounce off the wall, and you do it again and again and again. There's no this is how they move.
Really,
yeah, like, this is how they move. These are what their attacks are. It's not like a Mega Man boss. It's just like, well, here's just a bigger sprite for you to knock around. But with the Queen, at least, there is, like, a boss design here, and she's like a very big sprite that turns into a tornado and moves around. She's only vulnerable when she's in her human form. It is a boss fight with some design put into it, so I'll give them that.
Wow, this game came out at the same time as Final Fantasy IV in Japan, which also has a woman boss that turns into a tornado. What are the odds?
It's a fun idea. It's a fun idea. But yeah, and then when you beat the game, the ending is very stupid. It's not exciting. For the amount of time you put into Battletoads, there should be at least, like, some new artwork, a new song, but that's just not happening at the end of Battletoads.
I feel like the ending screen should just be a screen that says "Buy Battletoads,"
or like a therapy
slot should open and spew money at you,
or it should be just like a therapy hotline. Like, do you need help, or do you need someone to turn to? Please call this number now, because clearly there's something wrong, and Battletoads is not the answer.
Just a black screen on white text that just says, "We didn't think you'd get here, so we didn't do an ending bite."
I was planning on going, I have lots of notes for other Battletoads games, but we are, like, almost at an hour 30 in our recording, and we only have so much time, so I guess briefly I can just go over some footnotes of these games, and if anyone wants to add anything after I talk, please do, about the other Battletoads games, but there are two Game Boy games There's the Battletoads Game Boy game called Battletoads. That is an original game with some concepts based on the original NES game. That's a completely original creation. The second Battletoads game called Battletoads and Ragnarok's World, that is actually a compromised port of the NES game. So it's very confusing in that the actual port of the game is not called Battletoads, but Battletoads for the Game Boy is an original game. There is also Battletoads and Battle Maniacs. That is the SNES game, and it feels to me like it is a Castlevania 4-style remake of the first game, and that things are bigger, it's slower, prettier, more awkward, obviously not as quality as Castlevania 4, but a lot easier just because things are bigger and slower on that platform.
If I played this one, I played this one first. If I'd bought Battletoads for NES and for some reason thought it was amazing and it was like my favorite game ever, and then I bought this follow-up to it, I would feel so ripped off because four of the six levels are just almost exactly the same as the NES game, except with nicer graphics.
And the speeder bike stage is in the game, and it's not slower or clumsier. It's still fast and punishing, although I don't think it's as hard as the NES one, but... Yeah, and other games to follow, Battletoads Double Dragon, that is where I feel like that's the sweet spot of the series in which it is, the vehicle sections are very light and they put you on the offensive. It's mostly brawling and some very, very light platforming. Still some annoying stuff, but it is kind of the perfect medium between brawling and platforming and vehicle stuff. And for whatever reason, Rare decided to make this at least of a moderate difficulty. They weren't pushing it over the edge with this game. And then the final game is Battletoads Arcade. That was 1994, published by Electronic Arts for some reason. This game is a more violent, just very, very brawler intensive experience with the Battletoads. There's some shooting in it. It's very edgy in a 90s way. And this is when Battletoads, the plug was pulled on them because apparently this game was did very poorly. I never saw it in the wild outside of like retro gaming conventions. But this is when Tradewest was like, we don't want to deal with Battletoads anymore. We're not going to release these ports for this arcade game. Nobody cares. And then Rare obviously would get into bed with Nintendo with things like Killer Instinct and Donkey Kong Country and all through that era. So that is my like super wrap-up of the Battletoads. Any other comments on the games I mentioned very quickly? I have a lot of notes, but obviously not a lot of time to talk about these.
Yeah, I mentioned a bit before, but Battletoads Double Dragon is indeed like kind of the diamond out of all of them, just because it's so balanced and it has a lot of the stuff that makes like the bits that are very memorable from Battletoads, like the transforming fists or whatever. The bosses are really fun. The NES version of Battletoads Double Dragon is like stunning in some of the more graphical effects that it pushes on that. Like it looks almost as good as the 16-bit versions. And Battletoads Arcade, I'm always sad that didn't do well, because that, again, a 1994 2D game is just stunning to look at with all the sprite scaling. It is, again, like super impressive to look at graphically, and I'm always a bit sad. I'm very glad that that's coming back from Arcade 1UP. They're making that Killer Instinct cab that has Battletoads Arcade, and I'm actually like psyched to get that. But that game is very like, it's too much like in terms of wave based enemies and just sucking quarters out of you. Like it's actually a little bit too hard in terms of a brawler, but that's all I got.
On Rare Replay, they talk about the Battletoads arcade game, how the final boss doesn't even register any damage that you inflict on it for the first, like, something like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You can just pour like, laser into it, and it doesn't do anything because they just wanted your money. They're very transparent about that.
They said that
bold
was their
game design.
I love about Battletoads Arcade, really quickly, and this is very specific, and I apologize for that. At the beginning of each stage, you've got a little cutscene of the Battletoad activating its little wrist communicator and looking at who the next boss is going to be. And in order to pull that up, it has to press like 15 different buttons. And I just want to say, I find that very inefficient. And I'm never going to get another outlet to say that.
It's a really cool animation, though, of the finger like jamming all the buttons on the wrist communicator
thing. It's really
cool. It's neat.
The music's good, too. And I love how edgy that game is. It's full of horrible violence that you really don't want to see visited on the Battletoads.
No, enemies explode into like skeletons and things like that. And One thing I found interesting about this this whole series of games is that they're all basically developed by the same small team of people. Even the arcade game, I was watching the Rare Replay documentary on the arcade game, and like the people at Rare, they were making their own hardware to run the arcade game on. They were not using existing technology. They were figuring this all out. Like, arcade games were new to them, and arcade game design was new to them. And these are all the same people from the very beginning that were, you know, designing the characters and writing the music and designing the levels. So like the Battletoads team was always a core team of people working together across all of these different platforms. And I found that very interesting.
It is because Rare had like two arcade games, well, three, I guess, technically, KI 1 and 2, and this. And then they just never went back to the arcades at all, as far as I remember.
If you ever play this game, ever get to the second boss, the snake, intentionally get killed by it, because it's just the most horrific thing I've ever seen. Like, the violence is absolutely unnecessary.
It was.
I implore you to go and see it.
Very much the Mortal Kombat era of gaming in 1994 in arcades. And I mean, I think it failed because it was a brawler in 1994, and that was not the way to go, which is why Rare made Killer Instinct in 1994, and that was their big hit. And briefly, for a few minutes, there was a 2020 reboot made by Dalala Studios, which had an existing relationship with Rare. I believe they did some content for them on Sea of Thieves or something like that. But before that, there was like a brief Battletoads revival and things like Shovel Knight, in which the Xbox One version had Rash, Zitz, and Pimple as bosses you could fight in very Battletoads appropriate stages. And also Rash, I believe, was a fighter in the Killer Instinct reboot for Xbox One. So there was a few things before this, but this was the big revival. I will say I did play a bit of this game. I like the idea behind it, because the entire premise of the game is, can you believe we made this? Like, what even are Battletoads? They're so ill-defined. Nobody really remembers it outside of the one stage. I like that, but it's not a very compelling idea to base a game around. And I found that while very well animated, the graphics often got in the way of the brawling, which was my favorite part. And there were far too many mini-games to put up with in between that. So I think a lot of work went into it, but I think some of it was misguided in terms of what to prioritize.
Thing is, you just described the perfect Battletoads game. They nailed it completely. They made a massively flawed game with loads of poor ideas that nonetheless, like, shows passion went into it. That's Battletoads.
I didn't beat this reboot, but I did play like halfway through it, and I thought it was much better than I assumed it was going to be, because Microsoft went silent on this for like a full year. Like, they had their big press show that they did like that May, and then absolutely no mention of Battletoads at all. And then Battletoads came out like 3 months later. But I thought this was like pretty clever for what it was, but I do agree that visually it's way too busy. But I still, because when they announced that we're bringing Battletoads back, the first thing that popped in my head is, how do you even do this? You have to do a Mega Man 10. You have to just do an old school NES version of it. What else are you supposed to do? That's the thing that most people remember about those. And they didn't do that. They did something completely different. And it wasn't terrible, but I don't know how well this did. I think Microsoft put out a thing saying it actually sold pretty well. Like, it was a success. But I don't think they'll be going back to this anytime soon.
I basically found myself playing through it just to get to the next cutscene, because I kind of enjoyed the humor in the game more than the actual game.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I will say
the cutscenes were actually really funny.
It was surprisingly funny, and I like, again, they're playing with the ideas, like, who even are these people? So, like, they're introducing the Battletoads. It's like, yeah, Pimple's the big one, and Zitz is the cool one, and Rash, he's the one with sunglasses. So they know, like, there's nothing to these characters. So they have fun trying to play with that idea. Like, they're just unwanted by the world.
Sorry, really briefly, also made the Dark Queen safe for work, so that was appreciated.
That's true. And you know what? I don't know how I feel about that, because I feel like just let her be sexy and put a sexy man in the game, like, as her counterpart if you want to. But she's covered up in a very distracting way. Like, she has never been more covered up. It's like very Victorian almost.
Yeah, they could have played with that and say, like, the Toads could have been like, whoa, like, have her as sexy as she was, and they're just like, oh, and she's always being funnily covered up by other things, like, in the foreground. You could have, like, played with that, but they just kind of, you know, redesigned her and then just didn't really mention it that much, so it was more distracting that way. So
yeah, it's a real 180 from her design in a distracting way. But hey, you know what, they tried, and I'm glad that, like, after almost 30 years there's another Battletoads game out there, so maybe in another 30 years we'll have nostalgia for this, but who knows. But that was our take on Battletoads. Again, fun to talk about, but just the first game is the most notorious one, the most popular one, and notable for just the third stage. But you know what? Just like in life, it gets worse. It gets worse every step of the way. It just keeps getting worse and worse. So Battletoads is really teaching us all a lesson about the modern world, I think.
It's a metaphor.
It is. It really is.
That's what Rare had in mind.
So yes, this has been another episode of Retronauts. Thank you so much for listening, folks. Please find us online as Retronauts on Twitter. And of course, we are supported by fabulous listeners just like you. If you want to support the show, please go to patreon.com/retronauts. If you sign up for $3 a month, you get all these episodes 1 week at a time and ad-free and at a higher bitrate. But if you sign up for $5 a month, you get 2 full-length bonus episodes every month and also a weekly podcast and column by Diamond Fight. And when you sign up, you immediately get access to all the exclusive ones we've made so far, which is now like a year and a half and change worth of bonus episodes. So I guess that's like over 30 at this point. You probably haven't heard if you're not a $5 patron, and we have tiers on top of that, of course. And it's all happening at patreon.com/retronauts. Before I talk about what else I do, let's go around the virtual space here. I am stuck in the turbo tunnel, but let's hear what everyone else is doing. Let's start with Stuart. Stuart, where can we find you and what else are you up to?
Hi, I'm stuck in the terror tubes, and you can find me on Twitter at Stupacabra. I wish I'd just got at Stuart Jip, to be honest, but too late now. Then you can find my stuff on the Retronauts website or on Nintendo Life or sometimes in Retro Gamer Magazine. And I do lots of stuff. You can go on my Twitter and ignore my tweets and just try and find the things that I do, because you really don't want to be reading those tweets. They're not very good.
And Matt, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Matt McMuscles or on my YouTube channel, also Matt McMuscles. I do video essays, some gameplay stuff, and if you are into brawlers at all, the game The Takeover just released on the PSN store just a few days ago. I'm very excited about that, and a physical version of that game is also coming out. So yeah, living the dream right now, Bob.
Awesome. And Jeremy, what about you?
When I am not kicking a rat repeatedly to prevent it from detonating a bomb, I am Retronauts Podcasts, working at Limited Run Games, and producing a weekly video series on YouTube. Look for Jeremy Parrish. That's my name. You can find me on social media on Twitter as GameSpite. So look me up. I'm on the internet. I'm inescapable.
And if our listeners haven't had enough plugs by now, I also do other stuff outside this network. I have the Talking Simpsons Network of podcasts, of course. That's all happening at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. We have Talking Simpsons, a chronological exploration of The Simpsons, and also What a Cartoon. We look at a different cartoon from different series every week. You can find those wherever you find podcasts, or go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Sign up there for exclusive episodes, you know, advanced access, and also access to all of our limited miniseries we've done on things like Futurama, King of the Hill, The Critic, and so on. But that is it for this episode of Retronauts. Remember, there is always light at the end of the turbo tunnel.